welcome to By Any Means Necessary on Radio Sputnik in Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Eugene Puryear, and as always, we're your guide to connecting the political, social, and economic movements shaping the world around us. And today we are talking about, well, you guessed it, the inauguration of President Donald Trump, 45th President of the United States. I know, we've been like leading up to this for so many months, and it almost felt so surreal. But let me, I'm in studio with a lot of great guests. I'm almost starting the conversation before I introduce them. Anyway, in our studio, we have Anoa Changa, attorney and host of The Way with Anoa, Ben Dixon of The Benjamin Dixon Show, and Ashley Bunn, who's a board member of the NAACP of Toledo, Ohio, and the Toledo Young Black Professionals, all three of whom have been on this show many a time. So as you know, this is going to be a very good hour. Thank you all for joining the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Definitely.
So, yeah, I mean, it just, I to me, like, almost that is the place to start in a way, because it just, there was so much buildup, it almost seemed like it couldn't be real, Anoa. And then, like, here it is. I mean, how are you feeling now that this is a real thing?
I don't feel any different than I have been feeling, but it's awesome to be here with you guys. I mean, no, seriously, like, I know it's crazy outside. Like, it's crazy. There's a lot going on. But, I mean, being around all the people that have converged to not just make their statement today, but they're committed to working towards making things better long term and strategizing, but also collaborating in terms of resources, not just on random protest actions, but actual on meaningful, whether it's legislative initiatives or whatever it is. Like, so I'm very hopeful and optimistic seeing all that. If we could at least capture a third of what's out there, that would be like great going long term. So I'm okay. Like, I've been okay with this. I can't believe it's happened.
You made peace with it.
But I you know, I made peace with it, with the possibility of it back when we were hearing reports in the fall that the Clinton campaign wasn't exactly, you know, doing what they needed to do. So I made peace with this a long time ago. I saw the possibility happening. So here we are, you know, like, so.
Yeah. Ashley Bunn.
It still doesn't feel real. Honestly, I don't know what's going to happen from here on out. I've made my own personal steps towards securing my future. And I really love what you just said, Anoa, about seeing all the people here who came to stand up for something, because there are thousands of people wearing red hats who came to support someone who literally stands for nothing other than hate and division in this country. So to be surrounded and outnumbered by those people, or to be outnumbered and to stand with the people who stand for something, is a tremendous feeling. And a lot of people asked me, why would you even drive 8 hours from Toledo to stand around outside in the cold yelling and shouting when it's not going to make a difference? But I think, I feel in my heart that everything that we've done today, all the connections that I made, all the people that I spoke with in the opposition, will in some way have a lasting impact, because I didn't scream and shout and tell Trump supporters where they could go. I didn't tell them what they could do. I didn't tell them that they weren't welcomed in this country and that they should just go back home. I listened to them like Obama asked me to.
You and Steve Harvey, huh?
Right. I listened and I tried to have a real dialogue with them and tried to get their understanding of why they would support someone who is illegitimately in power, first of all, unqualified, and has surrounded himself with others who are unqualified. And unfortunately, I never got back any real answers. But, you know, if you traveled all the way out here, I assumed it's because you stood for something as well, other than just making the country great again, which still no one has defined what that means.
Ben Dixon, I mean, is it surreal? Is it, has it hit home, or were you prepared as well?
Oh, I was prepared, man. I'm actually okay. President Trump, it is what it is, right? And we know, you know, all the way back to the election. We saw it coming, and we know exactly what it meant for him to win. He's already made a move to take away the mortgage deduction for HUD loans. Mm-hmm. So they're already making these types of plays, right? They're going for the gusto here, and it's the privilege and the unfortunate privilege of being in the opposition that we actually have now. Mm. We have the right to oppose everything. And people say, give him a chance, right? Okay, if you want to. But I've seen what he's proposed. I have absolutely no justifiable reason to give him a chance to accomplish anything that he's proposed. So the Republicans have quite literally enjoyed being in the opposition for the last 8 years. And now they're going to get a taste of what it is to be responsible for the good and the bad, but primarily the bad that happens in America. They own it now. This is Trump's America. He owns it. And I have a feeling America is big enough to bring him to his knees.
Mm. No, I think that's a good point. And I'll just follow up with you and go back around with other folks to get their impressions as well. But I'll start with you again, Ben. I mean, you know, the one thing that also struck me is not that many Trump supporters showed. I mean, I don't know what the raw number is. I saw like an aerial feed of the mall when he was taking the oath of office and compared it to, I don't know if it was 2008 or 2012, but either way, the size of the inauguration was so significant. You know, Ashley, you and I were out on Pennsylvania Avenue at the Navy Memorial right across from like some prime bleacher seats
the
that like people pay
seats?
Money for.
Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, no one was in them. I mean, it does seem, I don't know how many protesters show, but it just doesn't seem like Trump got a great turnout.
No, it really looks like it, you can see, and not that I get a joy out of seeing people be afraid, but you saw the fear in the eyes of people with red hats, like scurrying as fast as they could to get away from the masses of people who came to protest and rally. And then, of course, you had that the small group of insurrectionists who came to cause damage. And that's what the news media is focusing on. But there are far more people here who came with a specific purpose to stand up against Trump through protest, through rallying and organizing. So, I think it felt like at times easily 10-1. Protesters and versus Trump supporters.
Mm-hmm. Well, Noah, I know that you were trying to get to where Ashley and I were, and you weren't even able to make it. I mean, what was the situation at these checkpoints that they had around the inaugural parade route?
Yo, Disrupt J20, shout out to, even though I couldn't make it inside like I wanted to, I thought, okay, as long as we're there, like, you know, I talked with Bob, producer of the show. We were like, okay, as long as you get there between, you know, try to get there before, no, I talked to Eugene too. We were like, before 9, definitely before 9, but, you know, try around 7. We had a long travel day, so I was like, okay, as long as we're there by like 8, we should be good. So we get here, we walking up, and we're like, okay, you know, checkpoint line, no big. It's not, it's a couple hundred people. It's not that bad. You know, we'll move. It was so slow and delayed, but with the protesters on the outside, and I understand what was going on. It just sucks because I really wanted to get inside too. But at the same time, we actually walked from, we were at 7th, and we actually walked over to 10th. We walked down to 3rd to try and see if we could get in that way. And basically, like, every checkpoint had a different group of protesters, and there were different issues being focused on primarily in certain areas. And it was even though I could not get in like I wanted to, it was still really great to see.
Yeah.
And they were overwhelmingly, I don't know if it's 3-1, I don't know what range, but there was overwhelmingly more protesters
absolutely
outside than there were Trump supporters trying to get in. Yeah. And most of them, they were very clearly, you know, a lot of us, you know, we've hustled, we've done what we had to do to be able to get here, you know, to do this. But there are a lot of people, whether they were standing in the line with their red tickets or the orange ticket line or whatever lines they were standing in, you know, there was a clear level of affluence in a lot of the people I saw who were Trump supporters who were here.
Oh, yeah.
So this whole narrative about white working class, they're used and manipulated for the vote. But those who are happy and actually celebrating, in the fur coats and the mink hats.
It was the whole J. Crew catalog.
Oh, I mean, like, it was like an Abercrombie and Fitch. Yeah. With the younger
Absolutely.
Ones, it's Abercrombie and Fitch. I mean, but like what you were saying about trying to talk to people. So when we were standing in line, like where we were standing at, there were quite a few Trump supporters where we were standing at when we were waiting. And then there were protesters kind of like on the fringes and in the front. But, you know, they were talking about different things and just listening to them talk. It's like you really have no clue. You haven't even fact-checked what you're repeating. Because they were like, you know, when he saved those jobs for Carrier, I'm like, okay. So, you know, the information, the media, like I really blame mainstream media so much for what's happened right now. Because he's been allowed to spin a narrative and nobody checked him for so many months that people have believed whatever he says because he's so honest and forthcoming. Because we're not really concerned about what he says when he says, you know, grab the pee or whatever, because he's just speaking his mind and he's right. not hiding what he really believes from us like other politicians do. That point of what he's doing, not the content, is what matters to some of these people. And they're so when he says something else, even if it's not true, they believe him because they think he's forthcoming and upright. It's crazy.
It is. And let me give you guys a couple numbers just to sort of pale this out. I took this out. It's from the Washington Post. So looking at Metro transit rides. So by 11 a.m. this morning, 193,000 people had taken trips. Bush in 05, 197,000 in the same piece. Barack Obama in 2009, 513,000 trips.
With a five? Yes. Okay.
So you can see the difference there. And the head of the Metro is saying that could double by the end of the day, which would be 400,000. Obama in 09 and the whole day had 1.1 million. So Trump will have less than half of what Obama had there. Wow. And remember that the presidential inaugural committee was saying, we're going to bring a million people.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be as big as Obama. And they got Bush 05.
The biggest.
And how many of those people are actually protesters, right? How many people are not there in support of Trump? So.
That's a good point. Well, Ashley, let me also ask you this. You did get in. You drove all the way from Toledo, Ohio.
Sure did.
With your dog, you said, to be here.
Yes, my puppy Yancey and I are all about the struggle.
Well, give us some sense, too. I mean, you mentioned this a little bit of what it was like inside of that area where you were right there at Navy Memorial.
It was electric. To say the least, I think the thing that I will take away from this experience the most is the amount of people who were standing beside me, complete strangers, all rallying for love against hate. And I had the honor to actually give a speech on the stage. And the thing that I said was people have been emboldened to represent their hate. We need to be emboldened to love and to embrace each other and those we don't understand and really come together. So I value this experience, and it wasn't wasted on me. And I don't think it was wasted on any of the people who've been sitting out there for hours in the Navy Memorial waiting for this parade to take place. Because there are people that are there that have been there since 5 a.m.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ben, I have to ask you this. I mean, doesn't this seem sort of like a harbinger for increased grassroots resistance? I mean, obviously, Trump is the least popular president going in. Like, people don't show up to his inauguration. The Republicans can kind of do what they want to some degree because they control Congress and the White House. But without the Democrats being able to be that legislative check, it kind of makes the street the only arena.
Yeah, no. This is an opportunity. The only question I have is how much we will carry this beyond the Trump administration, right? Will this energy, because being in the opposition is actually beneficial to your cause, right? Democrats are raising money hand over foot.
Yes.
Organizations are raising money hand over foot. Like that, I mean, I saw that coming down a mile away. So people are fundraising, people are organizing. The question is, will they drop that organizing once they feel like their guy is back in the White House, or their woman for that matter?
Right. Well, I mean, and certainly, Anoa, I mean, that was the case in the Bush administration. I mean, I think a lot of us were, I guess I'll use the term of the day, woke at that time. And, you know, even some people supporting Obama knew it wasn't going to be what it was going to be.
Right.
But a lot of people did think that was the case. And I wonder moving forward if that's the issue. I mean, what was interesting to me is even though the protest that I was at had come under the Trump agenda and like Trump was a piece of it, people were really talking more about issues.
Yeah.
And I mean, it just seems like if it's not going to be something that just ends up being, quite frankly, just a primer for the Democrats to make a comeback for Chuck Schumer, you know, to whatever, to be the Senate Majority Leader, it's going to have to be issue-based organizing.
Absolutely.
Not that we shouldn't name Trump, but.
No, absolutely. And I like what was happening. We were over at McPherson Park where there just was a convergence of activism right before we came over here with you guys. And like they're definitely, there's folks out there representing Standing Rock. There are definitely people out there talking about issue based. And unless, like you said, unless this is issue based and not just resist Trump, that's why I'm so skeptical of the Trump resistance stuff. Right. You know, whenever Neera Tanden or anyone's like, well, you have an ally. dude, I don't trust you. I don't trust David Brock. Like, all of y'all need to go someplace for real. Because, like, because you guys flip-flop to make sure you have your agenda in check. And your agenda is not the people's agenda. That's been very clear this entire election cycle. And Democrats, mainstream Democratic leadership, unfortunately, have not seemed to learn the lesson that they should have learned already very quickly. Like, there's a very steep learning curve. And they're not meeting the test. And people really need to start thinking about what they're going to do, not just electorally, but as you're saying, like organizing around these issues. We can't look to these folks to lead. You know, Cory Booker and other folks are, you know, we're standing up against hate, but they're all at the inauguration, right, you know, showing solidarity and speaking. So, I mean, like, I don't know how I can trust you to actually lead us when you're so willing and so focused on appearance of peaceful transition or whatever the heck that's supposed to even mean, and not out here really standing with us, the people who are going to have to bear the brunt of whatever his administration does. And we are going to have to focus on leaders like Sister sitting here with us, you know, like other folks, you know, at the local level. We're going to have to lift up their work and support them and get out there and really be what we need, because we're not going to be able to rely on these people. Whether they're our state officials, our congressional folks, you know, last week everybody's cheering. Well, I'm with John Lewis, and in John Lewis's, I live in John Lewis's district, right. Okay? You know what I'm saying? So, like, yeah, John Lewis's district has Coca-Cola and this, that, and the other. John Lewis's district also is a district where my son was harassed by police last week. He's 13. You know what I'm saying? So we can't be so caught up in this Democratic leader did this and they're so great, or they're the black guy and we have to support them. We have to look at who was standing with us and who was going to be there even when there isn't this big hateful threat there, you know, later on. Because I need somebody that's going to make sure that my kids are okay and that their future is secure. And I can't put that in anybody else's hands but my own. So, I mean, that's what we got to focus on. And it's not because I'm a hater, I'm a sore loser because Bernie lost. I mean, you know, that's not even the case at all.
Your rights still matter. That's the
point. My rights matter no matter what. Exactly.
I mean, I love everything that you're saying right now, because that is the energy that needs to be consistent. Mm-hmm. That is what our responsibility as citizens is.
Absolutely.
And the problem here, like you said, people are standing with politicians and not issues.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We need to hold our elected officials accountable, because these issues persist and they exist in our environment, in our society. I'm with you all the way.
And especially when we're talking about urban issues and urban areas, we got so many Democratic mayors, Democratic, you know, folks, congressional black caucus members, and the stuff is still happening.
And they get
no
elected every year because they go to the churches and they speak
out. Something different.
Oh, I'm glad you brought up David Brock, too, who's having his donor conference this weekend. and the craziest thing, one of the panels at this conference is about building the resistance to Trump. One of the panelists is Rahm Emanuel. Yep. The panel on building resistance to Trump.
Okay, this is why I don't mess. This is why I don't mess with the Democrats anymore, right? Because if you're going to bring somebody like Rahm Emanuel, who has committed a violent act against the black community, just humanity and period, and he's your representative for the resistance. I mean, they have, the Democratic Party has demonstrated to us two things. One, they haven't learned anything. And then two, they don't want progressives, the people who are standing on progressive principles, to be represented in this resistance or in their party. So at what point do we look and say, all right, enough's enough. They are not equipped to lead this. So we need to do our own thing. And it's not to say that we have to destroy the Democratic Party. But if we don't organize outside the Democratic Party, if we don't organize on issue-based issues, if we don't focus there, then we're going to always be following behind a politician. Like, I think I've heard everybody say, following a politician instead of the issue.
Yeah, no, I think that's a very good point. Well, we're going to take a break. We're going to be back with more with all our guests here on By Any Means Necessary on Radio Sputnik in Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Eugene Perrier. Stay with us.
By Any Means Necessary.
Welcome back to By Any Means Necessary on Radio Sputnik in Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Eugene Perrier, and as always, we're your guide to connecting the political, social, and economic movements shaping the world around us. And we are continuing our conversation around the presidential inaugural activities of Mr. Donald Trump, who is now the 45th president of the United States. And we continue to be joined by Noah Chenga, attorney and the host of The Way with the Noah, Ben Dixon, The Benjamin Dixon Show of The Benjamin Dixon Show, and Ashley Bunn, board member of the NAACP out of Toledo, Ohio, and also on the board of Toledo Young Black Professionals. And Noah, let me also ask you this. I think this is a relevant question. Since I mentioned you're an attorney, I'm going to lean on your expertise. I mean, I think one of the things that people have talked about in terms of Trump is the issue of, like, disrespect of civil liberties, the law and order piece. And so, I mean, it almost seemed to me that we got a little taste of that today in terms of what we saw on the streets. I mean, there was a kettle that took place. That's when police tried to surround people. I actually walked to it, through it on the way here. It was 100% clear that the police were creating a situation designed to draw people in. Peaceful protesters would be arrested. And then they can say, oh, we arrested 200 people.
Yeah. And actually, we're also here with Michael Solomon with us out there on the streets. And we did walk toward just to kind of see, just to get a little footage to see what was going on. And what you were talking about was right. You know, the use of some type of, whether it was a concussion grenade, whatever it is that was setting off explosions, and it kind of forced people to disperse, and the people would come back in to kind of see what was going on. But I do think that we're going to see a couple of things. I really think that we're going to have a resurgence in social justice lawyering, like people who are actively engaged as members of movements, but who are working in a legal capacity. We've already seen things with the National Lawyers Guild. I'm sure we're going to see stuff from, you know, National Conference of Black Lawyers, NCBL. You know, the ACLU, of course, is a premier organization in this area. You know, you have so many different organizations. You have the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. But, like, what we're seeing happening with the way the police, you know, bringing in the National Guard, as Ben and I were walking over from that area, you know, we saw trucks going towards that direction. I said they're going from where we just walked from. It's clear because that's the only thing, you know, happening in that direction like that. And we are going to, I mean, Trump released a statement, right, already today about how, you know, his administration is a law and order administration. Mm-hmm. They're pro-police. They don't believe in any of this protesting. They're not understanding any issues with the way police do business. And so we're going to see a huge cracking down, as we've already seen happening. And people need to be alert and aware of not just what, you know, they think their rights are, you know, what they think they are. You should be aware of what you legally are entitled to. But we're going to need more lawyers to step up and be willing to support people. But then we also need people to participate in things like the Chicago Bail Fund. I mean, because people are putting their bodies on the line, you know, to be out here, and they're going to need support on the back end. So.
Well, you know, and Ashley, I wanted to get your thoughts on this and others as well, but it touches on something that Ben mentioned earlier, which is sort of, why are we waiting for Trump to be something? You know, already, like, I mean, this is, like, crazy how fast they're moving. The WhiteHouse.gov website, like, already, this dude has only been president for, like, 2 hours, has removed the web pages under the WhiteHouse.gov for civil rights, LGBTQ rights, healthcare, and climate change. Already. So it's sort of like people are like, oh, someone asked me today, a reporter, well, what if, when people say give Trump a chance? Well, like, man, what more clear signal could you get?
Right. Exactly. And I think, Noah, a lot of people are going to need some free legal advice this weekend. But I think what's important is that we stay conscious about everything that's going on. And I'm not surprised that he has the time and the personnel to manage this website, but not staff up his whole cabinet. You know, the things that are going on in Africa right now need the U.S.'s attention. And yet we don't have people appointed to those positions in this new cabinet. National security, there are issues going on domestically and abroad, and no one is in place to staff some of those key strategic positions under Trump's administration, and yet he's attacking the issues that are important to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, yeah, please go ahead, Ben.
I mean, how petty is that? That's petty as hell is okay, right?
Yeah.
Okay, that's petty as hell. Because, you know, obviously they're just trying to send a signal that we just want to screw with you guys, right? Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, Jeff Sessions might take some real concrete actions, and I'm expecting him to roll back some of our progress. But this is just kind of, I wish we were not on public radio. Yeah. This is some basic, some child, this is a man-child kind of move. This right. is the thing, like I want to tease you, I want to make you upset. This is him trolling America, and it shows that his priority is not to be a leader, but to be the pettiest piece of person we've ever right. seen in American history in the White House.
Right. No, I think that's 100% true. I mean, it's really just sort of a bizarre. The other thing they also have announced.
Don't tell, it can't get worse. Come on.
Don't say
that. They've announced that they're building a new missile system for Iran and Korea to surround them with. I mean, you know, these sort of quote unquote anti-ballistic missile systems, which when you look at THAAD, which is the main one, it's also offensive and can be used in all sorts of different ways. So basically, you know, he said, like, I basically hate all people you thought I hated. Yeah. And I'm like definitely ramping up to try to take out Iran and North Korea via war. I mean, it really just is unbelievable on so many different levels the way he started. And the other thing, so you know, they usually call these teams that go into the departments on the first day or whatever to get it set up landing teams.
Landing teams, yeah.
I heard Mike Pence in a press conference last week and he was talking about them as beachhead teams. And I just sort of felt like, well, okay, that's the mentality. Like, this is like the Normandy landing of the right wing into the government.
They they have nothing better to do than to play war. And now they actually have people's right. lives with which they can play war, right? Mm-hmm. They have these wet fantasies of just being these great military leaders and having these great victories. And they are chicken hawks, right? Mm-hmm. And so now they have the ability to make an enemy out of someone that we're trying to not get into a conflict with Iran, right? We actually had some progress and we actually were able to put them in a position to bring them back into the international fold so that they're not a pariah. But Donald Trump said, we don't want that. We want a war. And I think it's both ideological as well as economical because this is definitely going to be a give me to the defense contractors industry.
Mm-hmm. Well, and now let me ask you this too. How do you evaluate President Obama here? I mean, you know, the photos, anyone who goes and looked at him, like just dapping up Trump. And I mean, like, here's a guy who's like basically everything you did, everything you stand for, I'm about to just try to crush that. And then, like, here's Obama, peaceful transfer of power. This is my, you know, I'm going to dap him up. I'm trying to help him out. I mean, it just sort of seemed like, I mean, Hillary Clinton, too, even showing up. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm petty, but I'm going to be like, the way he ran that campaign, I'm going to be like, it's on you, dog. You just figure it out.
Right. Absolutely.
Well, I mean, I'm torn, right? Because there's a part of me, when I saw the pictures of FLOTUS, like, I love Michelle. Right. So yeah. When I saw the picture, I feel like she really is his real life anger translator, because you do see Obama like man of the people posing and like, yes, you know, maybe I'm doing the right thing. I'm trying to keep the country together. And Michelle has like resting, you know, face. I'm like, we're going to call that now.
Resting black woman face.
Resting black woman face. Yes. Thank you, Ashley. Mm-hmm. I was like, we're going to call that Michelle face now. You know, they gave her a present and I wonder if they like made sure it wasn't ticking. Like, right. like, how do I feel about Obama? How do I evaluate Obama? I mean, I don't really know. Like, you know, I really do think that he was the president that the Democratic Party wanted and needed. And I really do think that a lot of the problems that we are now facing in terms of the lack of balance of power is directly due to Democratic misleadership, mismanagement. And to what extent that's his burden to bear, I'm not really sure. And I think we'll still be discussing that and evaluating that going forward. But I do, like, I am questioning him, Hillary Clinton, all these so-called Democratic leaders who are like, well, just give him a chance. I mean, even, like, right after the election, right? Like, right after the election, well, let's give him a chance. He won. It's legitimate. There's no problem. Then all of a sudden we went through, what, two months of, oh, my God, blame Russia. And now all of a sudden it's like the country needs to come together, give him a chance, give him a chance. How can I trust anything you say or do if you're telling me to give this man a chance? And he has no problem with police harassing my children for doing nothing but existing as black in America. Like, I don't understand what message you're sending to me. And why do I need to put my body on the line to make sure you or your ilk get elected the next time? Mm. Because this is how I felt in this election, right? You know, shout out. There's so many different wonderful organizations of black women who are supporting and promoting, you know, black leadership and women running for office and stuff. And I think it's beautiful and great. But to sit on a call during the general election to be asked to, you know, host a brunch with my girlfriends, to make calls, to volunteer for a campaign that had raised so much money and spent so much of it running ads bashing the other guy versus showing us why they should helping and engaging us in the process. I mean, when more of your time and energy is spent touting Henry Kissinger and other Republicans right. who support you, or you're starting Republicans for Hillary and stuff, and that's where your focus is, why should I now, like, come listen to you? And why should I listen to you? You guys caused this mess. Right. I didn't cause this mess by demanding you to be better.
Mm-hmm. Ashley.
It sounds like you've evaluated him. I mean, if you don't want to say it, I will. I'm
Go
disappointed.
Ahead. Okay, yeah.
I have to say.
I just love Michelle.
You know, absolutely. Absolutely. She and I are both Capricorns. I get it. I would have stood there and looked exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. I think in general, I am. I'm disappointed yeah. in our president. I think given everything that he had to go through, he didn't have to make this transition as easy for Trump's team as he did.
Mm-hmm.
And to see how much the Obama administration did to make the transition easier for Trump's team, and then for Trump's team to still not do anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's yeah. just like I get that you are constantly having to do and be better as a black man in this world. I get it. Absolutely. However, at a certain point, you.
Yeah.
Just it's not your job anymore.
Right.
It is not.
Right. Right.
Ben. You know?
Yeah, I was going to say on that two different things. I think it's exactly what you just said in terms of Obama likes to be the bigger person. Obama likes to be, this is a really huge challenge for me. I don't like him, but I'm going to make myself better. And this is what big people do. And not all the time. Sometimes it's more difficult for you to do the difficult thing, which is challenging a person in the face of people saying, oh, you're not doing it right. You should be helping a smooth transition. No, like this is Donald Trump. This is Donald yes. Trump who has quintessentially said that he wants to just he has placed people into position who are perfect to destroy the federal
government.
Absolutely. Right, so the flip side of it is Obama is an institutionalist, right? He wants to respect the transition of power, no matter if it's going to a demagogue like Donald Trump. And sometimes that is very detrimental to people who are issue oriented because the institution itself becomes a problem.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's a very good point. You know, a little side fashion note here that I have I don't know if other people noted, you know, the Make America Great hats again, how there's like a bunch of bootleg Make America Great hats. And there's like a lot
Welcome
of people with like
baby.
The real one. And there's a bunch of them. And I'm like, that is not
even
the right.
And the original one looks crappy. I mean, they look like garbage anyway. How much crappier did they make the bootlegs?
And where were the bootlegs made?
The bootlegs might be made in America.
Yeah, well, shout out to my returning citizens in D.C. who sell all the swag, all events.
I love it because there was a guy outside this morning. He's like, I didn't vote for him, but I got his gear. Here you go. And then there was another one. He was like, don't be a Democrat. They're screwing up. Eight years. My gear is 8 years money back guarantee or something. But so I'm like, this is the new economy.
Money back guarantee.
This is
if
like
you
the new
ever
economy.
See that person again.
This is the new economy, though. Like, I mean, you know, there's all these brothers out here hustling. Remind me a bruh man from Martin. You know what I'm saying? Like, they out here grinding this morning with all the gear and stuff like that. And I'm looking and I'm like, this is so wild. But this is why we need jobs and investments in our communities so they don't have to be out here selling Trump gear.
Well, let me ask you this.
I mean, like.
It's rough. Let me ask you this, too. Just speaking of black people and how they deal with Trump. I did mention it earlier, but, you know, the Steve Harvey move, the Martin Luther King III, which I wasn't necessarily as upset about, but still I felt like, you know, he got played out.
Right.
Even though he did mention poverty in his press conference, I'm not too mad. But, I mean, what do you make of the fact that the only black people Trump seems to be able to get to support him are celebrities?
They're not supporting him. First, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Let's be clear. We don't know. The only one that I could say probably is a supporter of him would be our brother Kanye. But,
I saw it.
But let's be clear. I think to a certain extent, we can't call these black leaders Uncle Toms for sitting in a room with
him. They're definitely not leaders.
Okay, you're right. Take that back.
That's
we can't call these
that's
individuals.
Uh-huh.
We can't call them Uncle Toms for sitting in the room with him. And I do think it's probably a waste of time because Donald Trump doesn't listen. So who should they be sitting in the room with it shouldn't be him because he's not there listening. He's thinking up funnier tweets to and more people to troll on the internet. But yeah. I struggle with it. I think if there was more transparency and if there was more of a clearer message of what the Black community as a whole wants. Now, if he sits down with, all right, go ahead. I'm going to let somebody else answer.
Go ahead. Well, I think he talks to the celebrities because they are also independently wealthy and they're not accountable to donors or anyone else. They're not accountable to anyone. Right. I mean, they're accountable to fans, but like most of the people who are watching Steve Harvey on like a Family Feud or whatever, I mean, like they're not necessarily going to be throwing a fit. But like, you know, Chrisette Michelle is getting like clapped back from Spike Lee. And then I saw one of my girls posted a picture of Spike Lee posing with Donald Trump like a few years ago. And it's like, so are you going to fire yourself now, too? So like, I think all of this like about who's meeting with Trump. I really don't care that Steve Harvey meets with Trump. And I don't. What does bother me is that these people put themselves in a position where they're like giving advice or talking about issues that they don't even know what they're talking about. Right. Because like for Steve Harvey to be talking about like urban issues and things like that, I'm just like, dude, that's like nowhere near. Just because you were poor and broke once upon a time on in the streets, right, don't mean that you need to be talking on behalf of other people. And I really do think that these people could actually be leveraging their celebrity and their notoriety to help uplift the voices of other people doing the work instead of, well, I got to meet with the president. I don't care whether you met the president. Right. Go put some of that money you got into like BYP 100 or one of these other organizations, Dream Defenders, you know, your local NAACP chapter. Like, go out there and actually help build some stuff up where you're from or where you are or both versus let me go sit and talk with Trump and take some pictures. Right. And just to touch on Martin Luther King III,
please.
I don't really care what the King sons do, considering the fact that they've been sitting there fighting with their sister over selling their dad's, what was it? It was his Bible.
Right.
And like they were selling his papers. Like the King children have been in a battle for years on and off. And they are like the sons in particular have been a disgrace to the family name. And we've seen them commodify his legacy in such a way that I'm sure him and Coretta are rolling over their grades every time those kids have to go into court to do. Well, they're more grown than I am. But every time they go into a court to do something. So
allegedly,
at least by age. But yeah, so.
Yeah, well, and Ben, I think it's because, you know, I was very critical, as you all know, because we talked about this, of how Hillary Clinton was deploying celebrities, too. I mean, it almost speaks to sort of like I don't even necessarily want to say a vacuum in Black leadership in America, although to some degree I am, but just how the traditional Black politicians are now so disconnected in so many ways from the community as surrogates beyond their patronage network, they aren't worth much. And that, you know, obviously more authentic leaders in the street movement for Black lives, people who are activists, you know, people who are like yourselves out there pushing for Bernie Sanders, they can't have people like that in there because you might keep it too real. And so the celebrities in some way are just like the default road to Black America.
It's akin to Hillary saying that she likes hot sauce, right?
Like,
how many times? How many times can you talk down to us by who you try to get to speak to us, right? I don't care what anybody who's met with Donald Trump at this point, they are no more a leader in our community than I consider John Lewis at this this stage, right? They have face, they have notoriety, they have wealth, they have privilege, but they are not representing the issues of the Black community on any level. And then to the extent of, do I care that they met with Donald Trump? I care because just on a human level, like, you have to be smart enough to know that you're nothing more than a photo op for Donald Trump.
Yes.
And they're not. And they feel like this is an opportunity for them. But this is actually an opportunity for Donald Trump to get exactly what he wants. And maybe I shouldn't expect more out of them because maybe they aren't the brightest people that are, you know, being. And that's why they don't need to represent us. They are not leaders and they are not our representative.
Yes. Well, we're going to take another break here on By Any Means Necessary on Radio Sputnik in Washington, D.C. We're going to be back with more from all of our guests in our final segment. And as always, we are bringing you political, social, and economic movements that are shaping the world around us and connecting all those dots. Stay with us.
By any means necessary.
Welcome back to By Any Means Necessary on Radio Sputnik in Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Eugene Perrier, and as always, we're your guide to connecting the political, social, and economic movements shaping the world around us. And today we are continuing our discussion here about President Donald Trump, whose inauguration is today. As we speak live, the inaugural parade is just getting ready to begin. Donald Trump has reviewed the troops, which strangely included like this detachment of like Revolutionary War themed soldiers. I mean, I don't know. I guess you got to do what you got to do. But I was like, definitely like, what is this? But you got Mike Flynn. The whole thing is very, honestly, like, let me just introduce my guests before I keep it going. We're still joined by Noah Changa, Ben Dixon, and Ashley Bunn. I mean, it really is. I mean, people who know me know I'm a big wrestling fan. And, you know, when Trump was on wrestling, like, Trump was like legit on wrestling. Like, Trump did his thing on WWF. But, like, his real-life presidency is like his WWF character. And it's just, like, it's so crazy to me to even see him operate, because it just shows how much elections have become entertainment and why he won. Because he was smart enough to know, okay, a lot of people are angry, and, like, I can play on the same stuff. Everyone, you know, racism, anger, jobs, whatever. I can get a witch's brew together. But then all it is entertainment, and who does entertainment better than me? You know, I did WWE. I did You're Fired. Like, this is what I do. I'm Donald Trump. I'm a showman. And it just is like, man, it just is a further reflection to me of just the Disneyfication of our politics.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at, when you have the head of CBS saying, you know, well, he's good for ratings, right? I mean, this is exactly, like you just said, the Disneyfication. I mean, the Disneyfication of America in general, right? Because when they're more focused on getting the good ratings and having the biggest audience and you know, drawing that crowd in, regardless of how reckless it is ultimately for people, since so many people get their information from, or well, misinformation in this case, from, you know, especially their local news outlets, it's a real problem. And he is. And I mean, he, even when he did his victory lap, right, he even, you know, they started chanting, you know, jail her or whatever. And he was like, shh, shh, we won now. That was just for the election. It's over now. And there have been so many instances where he's now, there are a few moments here and there where he'll say something that sounds almost kind of sane. And it's like, okay, you weren't saying that during the election, but people aren't picking up on that. They're like, okay, well, you know, he's going to lead us and he's going to do this. And it's just, it's so disheartening. And if people don't get their act together, he will have two terms, or Pence will have his second term, right? So, like, there really is a need to fight back against this focus with the way narratives are being told about how, you know, just letting him just run his mouth unchecked. And it's not just the Disneyfication or they're focusing on the entertainment value with him. It's also, you know, the hyper hysteria we see from whether it's outlets like Washington Post or you know, news outlets like MSNBC, CNN, you know, Keith Olbermann. Like, they're so hyper over the top. We're going to lose the middle ground and actually having a balance in information if we don't force people to stick to, like, honest narratives.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And to that effect, I mean, I don't care what the first lady wears. You know, I don't care how they decorate their house at Christmas. Mm. What I do care about is that there are millions of people at Christmas who don't have homes, don't have food, don't have jobs, so that they can afford gifts for their children. Mm-hmm. And it has really hurt my heart, because I was a fervent, passionate follower of politics as a child. It spurred me into studying politics in college. And that was when politics started to change to be less about the issue and more about the person and more about what they're doing. You know, is Bill Clinton our first black president? Like, oh, he can play the sax? I guess he's really going to be there for my issues. And it,
you could also send the Negro National Anthem.
Oh, well, in that case.
And he likes Black Eyed Peas. So
then he must be there focusing on the issues for our community. And the responsibility and the onus has to fall on us at some point.
Absolutely.
Because we created this level of ignorance and comfort that as long as this politician is someone I can have a beer with, then he's obviously going to be someone I don't have to check.
That's got to be the dumbest phrase I've ever heard, that I have a beer thing. And I don't know if I don't think it was actually Obama who brought it in.
It
was in that campaign,
because
it was Bush. Mm-hmm. And then you remember in the 2008 campaign when Hillary Clinton went to that bar and was taking those shots with those factory workers. And I mean, look, I know a lot of people who I like to drink with who I wouldn't want in any position of power.
I don't want you watching my dog.
I
exactly.
I got love for you, but no. no. And it's just like, at what stage in the game? I mean, I'm not saying you got to be like a Nobel Peace Prize winner or whatever, but you got to have, well, for whatever that means. Henry Kissinger has one. Barack Obama has one and dropped more bombs last year than ever before. So, I mean, you sort of see the fallacy of that. But, I mean, it does seem like there has to be some basic peace. But you know what? I don't know why I say it seems that way, because obviously with the cabinet nominees, you don't. And, you know, right. Reality is defined by itself, down. Right? I mean, right. Reality is definitely defined by itself. So
hate
to the
public
extent.
Schools, become Secretary of Education.
Right.
Hate civil rights.
DeVos.
Attorney General.
Well let's actually do a quick roundtable here. Right. Most ridiculous nominee so far, Anoa.
This is only one.
Dang, I don't know which one's more ridiculous.
I know. That's why it's a good question.
I'm going to go with DeVos.
Dang okay. It.
She wins.
I'm going to go with her. I mean, I don't know. It's a toss-up between her and Sessions, but I'm going to go with DeVos because the fact that she has no education experience. I mean, when she's talking about grizzly bears and that's why we need guns, my kids are 13 and 15, and they're like, yo, where do people go to school?
Where do you find her at?
So true. Ashley Bunn.
I want to say this to the Betsy DeVos thing. One reporter actually called the school that she was referring to, and they said, in order to fend off bears, we have a gate and bear spray. So no guns.
Well, that's what my kids said. They would say, with grizzly bears, you lay down and pretend you're dead.
I saw The Revenant with Leonardo DiCaprio.
Right.
Exactly. Having a gun in the school is not going to help you. Ben.
It still has to be Betsy DeVos because, I mean, but you have to understand, like, she feels like she can do it, because if we elected Donald Trump and he doesn't know anything, then surely you can elect, you know, you can get her appointment there. So, but she was completely inept, and I think that's just an indication of what the next 4 years are going to be like.
And she donated how much money?
I think it's $250 million from
her
family.
Position.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, unbelievable. I think there's like 17 people who are voting on it who have gotten a ton of money from her and aren't recusing themselves. I mean, well, I guess theoretically, there is no, like, recusing yourself on something like this.
Well, Sessions can vote on himself, right?
And here's the question is, like, do you vote against yourself to seem fair? I mean, do you vote for yourself?
I'm not worried about that.
You know, I'm going to go with Rick Perry.
Oh.
Because you'd think, I'm thinking, okay, you nominate him for Secretary of the Energy. He wanted to cut it. He must know what it's about. And not only did he not know what it was about, but he, like, enthusiastically didn't know. He was thinking, like, oh, yeah, I'll definitely be Secretary of Energy. I'm going to travel the world, promote oil and gas. Oh, wait, it's not about that? Like, I mean, like, you didn't Wikipedia. You mean Google? I mean, I just feel like anytime someone sends me a job description, I do a little extra research. What can I find out about this company? What kind of position is this? He didn't look once.
That's some serious entitlement there.
If I could throw someone else's name into the ring, it would probably have to be Dr. Carson.
Yep. That was my other pick.
Brain surgeon, Dr. Carson. And raise your hand if you think, listeners at home, that Trump nominated him for housing and urban development because he's black.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Not because he has any experience.
And you can see that he had no experience when he's on the conference call with Trump, Steve Harvey, talking about Steve Harvey's mentoring in public housing. I would pay to, like, have heard that call.
Absolutely.
Like, for those three people to be having a serious call.
But Eugene, they're three idiots, right, across the board. They don't know. You get to a certain threshold when you don't know how dumb you are. So who is going to actually be identified on that call? They think they sound good to each other. God, what do we... God
and
bless
a bunch
America,
of purple drink in the projects? That's all we need. That'll solve the problem.
Well, and also, I got to just, like, razz the Democratic senators who, you know, grilled or didn't grill Carson.
Right.
I mean, whatever Carson said in the one-on-one interviews, they were giving him so many softballs. But, like, I just don't know how anyone... Like, my first question is going to be, like, okay, so a month ago, you took yourself out of the running for a cabinet position because you said you were not qualified to run a cabinet-level government department. Like, so what has changed between last month and today that all of a sudden you are qualified? I mean, like, I actually think, Anoa, that was a big piece, is it was so many softball sessions, Carson. I mean, they got a couple people, and, you know, Al Franken, I will admit.
He came for them.
He did a little something. But really, I mean, even the, you know, Elizabeth Warren, the so-called progressive person, all she did was ask Carson a little trap question to get in something about Donald Trump's business, you know, conflicts.
I have a master's degree in city and regional planning. I'm more qualified. And I did graduate level, you know, I worked in grad school in the city of Columbus Department of Development. So I could talk a little something. I did public housing policy law.
You know what HUD is.
I know what HUD is. Yeah. I know what it does and what it doesn't do. But it's so, and to your point, Ashley, oh, he most definitely nominated him because he was black, because they thought he had grown up in public housing. And that's what they said. They thought he grew up in public housing, and it just turned out that he grew up in, like, a working-class neighborhood in Detroit or whatever.
Oh, wait. I haven't seen this.
But no.
Wait,
they thought that he grew up in public housing, and he didn't actually grow up in public housing. But he grew up in a, you know, a lower-income, working-class Detroit neighborhood, I think, is what it ended up being. Because they got misinformation from someone or whatever. But this
is real life.
But it is real life. But what is disconcerting is we've already had so much damage done to the institution of public housing. We already have an affordable housing crisis going on in this country. We've already seen what happened when Hope 6 was put into place under, you know, President Bill Clinton, and how that decimated public housing opportunity for so many families with this creation of, quote unquote, the mixed income, when they were trying to decentralize poverty. And really all they did was re-centralize it, but just in other areas off of these existing sites. And now we have families scrambling. You know, you have waiting lists, like in Chicago. I haven't checked in a long time what the waiting list is for a Section 8 voucher, whether project-based or, you know, one you can travel with. But it's been years. It's a years-long waiting list, and that's the case in so many different places. So and the price of housing continues to go up in so many areas. So we're so happy about these different big booms that happen, and, oh, this neighborhood's getting built up. I know you guys see it here in D.C. too. But it's like it's happening everywhere. We have these really huge issues. We have massive issues with homelessness. There's all types of stuff going on. And here we have someone like Ben Carson, who neither believes nor supports nor understands what he's doing. And I mean, I think trying to make it easy on them, and this whole idea of peaceful transition of power, it has nothing to do with us, the people who are in most need of sound judgment and policymaking. Like Ben said, it has to do with protecting these institutions and the status quo and whatever that's supposed to mean, you know,
because
wherever.
They really could embarrass the hell out of every person that Donald Trump nominated.
Right.
And you could see that these Democrats who talk so much trash on Twitter did not do that. They didn't, and it goes exactly to that. They don't want a national embarrassment. They would rather put someone incompetent in office, Democrats. I'm not talking about Republicans right now. They would rather put someone incompetent in office than to completely eviscerate that person live on television so that they can't get in office. Because what other excuse could they have for allowing Betsy DeVos or even Ben Carson or Rick Perry to actually get that far?
But also, like, to that point, too, because the problem is this is part of the Democratic traditional calculus. If we embarrass them and make them look dumber than us, this is the arrogant kid at school that likes to make, you know, the dumb kids look bad,
right.
But nobody likes them. Nobody's coming to their birthday party. This is the same exact thing we're seeing, like, in real time with our politicians. They're still sticking to this traditional way. The Republicans are bad. The Republicans are stupid. They don't know what they're doing. You need to come get with us. But that does not work.
But in,
it
their,
does
in,
not
the,
work
in their case,
at all.
In the Senate, in terms of getting these people passed, and maybe I'll give them this excuse. Maybe they feel like these guys are just going to make it anyway. And so there's nothing we can do. But to me, you have to demonstrate, like, these people are incompetent. And no one fully, except for Betsy DeVos, she was the only one that was fully fleshed out to be completely incompetent. But all the rest of them, like, they really did get some softball questions. And it's not, to me, it's not a matter of so much saying, though, we're smarter than you. It's showing that you are incompetent and are not equal to the task for which you have been nominated. And I didn't see that happen enough from Democrats who are supposed to be a part of the leadership of the resistance. Like, what? We're in trouble. If that's the best we can do in resisting, we're in trouble.
Well, Cory Booker, I mean, you know, he makes the whole big thing. Well, I'm going to stand up to Jeff Sessions. Then the next day votes against lowering the drug prices, which and honestly, like,
couldn't because New Jersey jobs. And whatever else he had to say as justification.
And then to see that he spoke at the Peace Ball, the so-called progressive alternative to the inaugural balls, like, what a joke. I'm sorry, but, like, what a joke. You're going to let Cory Booker, who, I mean, like, what a hustler. Yeah. I mean, like, since that dude moved into the housing project when he was mayor in Newark, you knew he was just a hustler trying to get ahead, trying to climb up a grease pole. I mean, it really is crazy. And it's actually funny to me, though, to see how many people defend him so quickly in black politics. I mean, I know, Ben, you and I both kind of had a little – I don't know if we had a back and forth with DeRay, but we both kind of had to, like – check the dude. I mean, well, because he's saying like, oh, well, this is the Wyden Amendment is no different than the Sanders Amendment. And as we reported on this show, it actually makes all the difference in the world. It requires that FDA certification or whatever, the importation, which they deliberately didn't do in two separate presidential administrations. So, like, the fact that just basic facts like that right. are being distorted, I mean, it really, I don't even know what to say.
Y'all, this is real life.
I need a shirt.
Sometimes I hate the phrase of misleadership class, but there is definitely a black misleadership class. There's a political misleadership class, and we have these new people in training to be a part of that, you know, and it is the DeRay McKessons, particularly with this issue. I try to steer away from DeRay just because, you know, eventually I might, you know, whatever, it's going to be whatever with him. But, with this issue, he blatantly put out misinformation, and either he was not informed enough to have that conversation, so he should have stayed out of it, or he was intentionally being a propagandist to the detriment of people who actually are having life or death situations with their medicine. And that's very dangerous for a person that has that much influence.
No, I think it's a big issue. I mean, there's still some in my own mind, this small belief that this whole collapsing, imploding of the ACA could be the silver lining for single payer healthcare. I mean, it's the most logical, obvious option. And in a crazy situation where you got to do something, you know, maybe that's what people seize on.
I mean, we'll have to see. It just doesn't make any sense. I'm not going to say, I'm only going to say it one more time, that this is real life. But the question then becomes, and this is the question on everybody's mind, what's going to replace it with? Like, what's the replacement? Where do we go from here? What is the expectation? How are we as a citizens making it clear that we won't stand for less and less than healthcare that we can afford that provides services to all Americans, not just the wealthy? And so it keeps falling on us to be responsible for that. These poor white constituents who voted for these Republicans with the expectation that they're going to be supported and taken care of continue to be blindfolded. And I don't know how much suffering they're going to have to endure before they wake up and take responsibility for legislation.
Well, they're already suffering in a lot of places. Like living in West Virginia for several years, like there's a huge disconnect between how things actually work and, like you said, this being real life and then what they're being fed. And if you got the good old boy who grew up down the way that played, you know, football with your cousin who's now in Congress, who's telling you, you know, I know your family, I've been in your store, this is what it is and this is what they're doing. They're going to listen to that local person, even though they're lying to them, even though they're selling them a hustle versus whatever else is going on. But the problem is because, you know, you have these Democrats on Mount High that don't get down there and actually talk to the lower people, right, because that's how they act. They're going to take the word of this person, even though they're like Joe Manchin, for example, who's senator from West Virginia, can't stand him. I had a friend who was like, I can't believe he's selling us out like this. I'm like, dude, he's been selling you guys out even before he was governor. Like, have you not been paying attention?
Right.
But I think when you talk about the ACA, the fact that they've been trying to threaten to cancel the ACA for like 6 years now, and they have no plan.
Well, either way, we're going to have to leave it there on today's show. By any means necessary, thank you to all our guests for our inauguration special. And we will be back next week, as always, here on Radio Sputnik in Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Eugene Perrier. And as always, we're your guide to connecting the political, social, and economic movements shaping the world around us. See you next time.
By any means necessary.